Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. We finally made it. It's Friday. No Schmidt. We gave him a swift kick to the backside, and he's headed towards Boulevard Wheatland. I'm a little jealous, but...
That's right. We're taking over.
But Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke, I guess we are a short distance away from each other, just a piece of glass separating us. But you could find us on Twitter, at 2Birds1Stone, at Danny Burke 5. You can tap the line. Schillingbridge Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 402-466-3776. That's 466-3776. Or toll free 800-825-5865. Schmidt is on his way, as we said, down to Kansas City for Yanks Royals with Junior and his cousin. So here we are.
Taking over.
And I think we're just going to tape ourselves into the chairs, and we're staying for a while.
Yeah, we're going to do our, I don't know if we're going to do our best Schmitty impersonation, but we're going to try our best, so feel free to roast us, call in, let us know what you think. But no, it should be a good show lined up. We got Brandon Vogel here in about 15 minutes, going to talk a lot of Nebraska stuff, mailbag, hot reads, Noah Vedral update. Then in an hour, we got Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, coming on. He'll tell us about his thoughts on Frank Solich being welcomed back by Nebraska and Tom Osborne. So exciting show to come.
I'm also going to be honest that while the intro was playing, I had nothing through my headphones.
You're just improvising it there.
I know like how long it is, and I know when to listen for the cues and everything, but...
I saw you were struggling. I was like, you good? And you just gave me like whatever thumbs up. I was like, maybe he's just not ready, but I guess it
no,
was because of the music.
I couldn't hear anything. That's basically what it was. Like, I had to keep fiddling with the headphones to even hear anything, but I'm good now, and now it's probably too loud, but... Now I have to listen to the whole show.
So. Yeah, I guess so. Now you got to listen to me. That's your biggest problem.
Like you said, we've got Brandon Vogel. We've got, he's about 15 minutes away. Bill Dolman about an hour away. But why don't we go ahead and start? I guess we can start with a little brief news. We can finally put to bed Joe Burrow and
about time.
And bury that away. That way we don't have to talk to Kranach about it tomorrow. Joe Burrow is going to LSU. He's made his official decision, so...
not too surprising.
No, not really. And you got to think that LSU's kind of been, it's, I think Schmidt said it 2 weeks ago. It's kind of, LSU's a place where quarterbacks' careers kind of go to die.
Yeah.
not only is it Death Valley, it's just like the death of the quarterback, but that's just the offense they've always run. So, but with Coach O there, it could be completely different. Who knows? They might try to implement what Joe Burrow's learned under Urban Meyer, but.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what Coach O can do with him with the hype around this kid. I mean, granted, he didn't win the starting position, but it'll be interesting to see them two link up.
Yeah, it's 40 pass attempts, and I don't know. And Dwayne Haskins got the one win against Michigan, which how much weight you put behind that, I guess. But I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see him, what, like you said, what he's learned and kind of taking that and taking him down to LSU and kind of into a different environment, because you go from a spread offense where the quarterback has to be Braxton Miller, has to be JT Barrett, has to be basically a running back that throws, to having, maybe I formation. But like I said, they could switch it to spread. They could, do whatever with it. But we no longer have to worry about if Joe Burrow's coming to Nebraska, so we can kind of put that to bed, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Something that can't be... put to bed, I guess.
This is going to stay relevant here in these summer months, at least.
It's that's the thing. It's like it's early May, and it was middle of April or whatever. But this thing has been going on for too long, probably. I guess you could say. But it's Frost says, Saban says, Frost says back, Saban's the UCF. So. What's so funny, too, between the whole Frost Saban and the newest one was, he had an interview with KETV in Omaha, and he said that, Alabama probably has one or two of their national titles that
are self-proclaimed.
Aren't legit. And I was telling you, and it's not, I don't know how like many people know, but there's 9 unclaimed national titles for Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
So if Nebraska just went, we're going to take all 9 of those, yeah, people are probably going to go out and slander them too. But what's so funny is, like, yeah, did the whole avalanche get started with UCF claiming themselves as national champion? Sure. But it's everyone else that's taken it, and it's like, let's make this a big deal. Let's see what Frost has to say about it. Let's see what other people have. Now they're going to Saban, and now they're like, now let's go back to Frost. See, and then I'm sure they'll go back to Saban in his little whatever barbershop show, and what do you think about what he said? It's just going to keep going.
This whole conundrum is the LeBron James versus Michael Jordan GOAT debate, but to a smaller extent, you know, like for college football in the off months. Like, let's see how long we can stretch this out and make this a big deal and debate on it and just like, I don't know, just see what we can get from it. Like, it is very interesting, don't get me wrong, just to see what their banter is going to be back and forth, but I don't know. I mean, you kind of know what they're both going to say here, and they're really tired of talking about it at this point.
Well, and the thing, too, is, like, with Frost, and so many people have said, oh, well, he's not talking down about UCF, but it's more so, you know, why would he go back on, like, what he said before? And, and why would, you know, how do the players feel about this? And I know that you can say after the fact, like, I don't think I would have endorsed it either. But I truly don't think that Scott Frost would have endorsed being called national champions or putting the banner or anything like that. Like, yes, UCF is doing something to try to stay relevant and promote themselves. But they've also, as soon as they dropped that banner and gave out the rings, they basically, they shut up and they were done.
Right.
And now it's everybody else like, but rings, but banners. What does Frost think? What does Saban think? What is, like, why does it matter? Like, I don't know. It does to an extent, but it doesn't matter where it's like, this has got to be a top headline on ESPN.
Right.
Frost
it's just
says.
One of those summer headlines, man. And you're right. I don't think Frost would necessarily gloat about it by any means. He would say, like he did prior, that, you know, we're deserving for that playoff spot and that we should be in that position to, you know, possibly win it and be the technical champion, sure. And I think he'd be like, all we can do from here on out is just keep working, you know, keep winning and see if the committee finally respects us.
He's an on the field guy.
Exactly.
You have to prove it on the field. He accepts that there is a 4-team playoff.
Mm-hmm.
They just put that system in place.
That's just not set up correctly.
He just thinks it needs to be more where teams like UCF, teams like Boise State, teams like USF, SMU, Houston, what, you know, whoever you want to go with, you can count on two hands, multiple hands. There are teams that have gone through stretches of 2 or 3 years where it's like, wow, they're 10-2, they're, you know, 13-1. That there's plenty of teams that have deserved to potentially be in that position. And I've always thought, you know, 13 or 14 Division I teams is 13 or 14 Division I teams. Like, it doesn't matter if you're Western Michigan winning 14 games, you still beat 14 Division I teams that have that kind of talent, that those kids could have gone somewhere else, but they decided to go there. Like, I don't know. I don't put so much faith into the, oh, well, our school's better. Like, yeah, development can be better and everything, but you can have great development at a Western Michigan, at a UCF that is equal. It's just they aren't playing the same talent necessarily, or developed talent, that they don't get that stage. So
it's an imperfect system. I mean, no one's going to be happy at the end of the day when you have circumstances like this.
It's better than the BCS, but it's almost the same as the BCS, like in the same fashion. But we could go back to the day when it's like the AP thinks you're the national champion and the coaches think you are, and you can just claim whatever you want.
No one's going to be happy with it at the end of the day, even if you keep expanding it. I think everyone's just going to find a flaw in the system regardless.
You're
going
to get to 8, and then the ninth, the team that's in 9th is like, well, why aren't we a wild card? And then UCF gets into the playoff just because. You know what I mean? Like, it's a never-ending cycle that I'm not happy, they're not happy, and it's... So I think that's why they kept it to 4, is that, like, they're hearing all this hate about it. It's like, but if we expand it, is it going to be more hate, better well-received? Right. Like, then will people want 16?
Yeah,
and
I think we'll just see. Only time will tell if that'll eventually happen, and they're still giving that 14 playoff a try. So, I mean, we'll probably see a change at some point, but I wouldn't say anywhere near in the future, though, like right away at least. But
Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke, Hill Varsity Radio. Call in 402-466-3776 if you have anything to say. Our question, I believe, to open this is, has the nation and has Nebraska gone Frost crazy.
That's right. And we were talking about it before the show. There's an article on SB Nation saying about the Frost mania. Has Nebraska just like lost its mind about it? Have they been going too crazy about it? They posted a lot of pictures of the gear and just all the t-shirts and all this different apparel of Frost all over it. Nebraska people going nuts and like local stores hanging banners. And they're like, yeah, guys.
Throwing out the first pitch at the Salt Dogs game and giving out 1,500.
Yeah, all right,
Frost,
that's cool.
So,
that's awesome.
But they were pretty sweet. But
yeah. So basically continue. They're like, yeah, we get it. We're excited. We love it too. But like, it's more so like, let's just take it a notch back. I don't know if it's like an act like you've been there mentality, but just like, let's just wait, maybe give it some time. Just don't go too overblown with it. But, Colton, I don't know, what are your thoughts on it? Are you kind of more like, yeah, let's take it back, or no, the excitement's okay?
I go back and forth. And the reason I go back and forth is like, yes, let's be excited that a former player and, you know, a fairly well-known player is, like, taking over at the helm. Everyone wants it to be the 90s again. So getting someone from the 90s that isn't Tom Osborne is your next best choice, basically. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think everyone's like going absolutely wild about it, but the fact that in the middle of May, we're seeing headlines about stuff that I don't know why it matters, and then you've got all these shirts, and not like anything is necessarily bad or anything like that, but it's just like, are we setting him up as fans to too high of a pedestal?
See, I don't think that, and we'll get into it a little bit with Brandon Vogel talking about reality versus expectations, and I think most fans understand that we're going to give Frost time here, and they saw what he could do at UCF, mm-hmm. and they know he can do the same thing here. So first year, you're just hoping, you're not expecting maybe a great record, at least I'm not. I'm not going
to
be ashamed.
You want them
to
be competitive,
right,
though.
Just stay in the games. Don't get blown out, and I would be content with that for the first year. But yeah, so just going off of that, about the whole Frost mania thing, I don't hate it. I mean, I could see from an outside perspective, people are just like, all right, you guys got to take it easy with Frost. But, you know, personally, I didn't grow up here. You did, but such a big deal for everyone, mm-hmm. bringing it back to the 90s. Let everyone enjoy it. Let them have their good times with it. Let them have something to look forward to that they maybe haven't in such a long time. So I understand why the gear, whatever, it's fun. It's cool. Get a shirt. It's awesome to see it and what everyone can come up with for design. So I don't hate it. I guess I could say or understand where someone would be like, you know, just be a little bit more modest about it. But, you know, we'll talk about it with Bill Dolman, too, about relevancy. And Frost, that's what's extremely relevant here. And he says throughout the whole nation, Dolman does that Frost and Nebraska are. So that's why it's such a big deal, mm-hmm. especially locally.
Yeah, and I mean, making the shirts and everything, like, what's any different than, you know, wearing, like, one of your old jerseys to the game? Like, oh, this was so-and-so's jersey back in this year. And, like, it's just getting it just because it's a new shirt or whatever. Like, it's just kind of reliving, like, what he did and you know, and everyone wants to come back and like, but remember, he didn't pick Nebraska, he picked Stanford, and then he came back. And mm-hmm. it's like, he still won a national championship for him. Right. He's still like, he's learned under really great coaches. He's just has this history and this knack for football and coaching football. And like, I think to an extent, yes, everyone, and Kranak said this a week or two ago, the whole, like, how patient are fans actually going to be? Like, if it starts going sideways pretty early, are fans going to be like, it's okay, it's year one? Maybe, but at the same time, you know, we've seen, and I know no one else was named Scott Frost or Tom Osborne in the past 15 years, but, you know, if it starts going sideways, people are kind of like, was this right? Should we have done this? But if Scott Frost wouldn't have come here and would have gone somewhere else, then that probably would have been the last chance at Nebraska even getting Scott Frost. So, you know, I get where the, like, excitement's coming from, because this may have been, like, the last opportunity to get him to coach at Nebraska.
And it was such a big deal, and, you know, you weren't sure if you were going to get him coming off of the undefeated season, the self-proclaimed national championship. So just to get him here in itself is just amazing, and now the potential opportunities, of course you can be excited for that. I love it.
Yeah, I think the crazy part's not the gear and all that.
No, but that was just like kind of their rude example
right.
of it, and they showed the examples of them on there and kind of critiqued them and whatnot, but it's obviously to
like,
a larger extent.
Whatever.
Yeah. Like there's like a skirt with like Frost's face on it or something. Like,
that's
okay.
A no. That's a no for me, dog. But the thing, too, is just like I think the craze isn't the fact that, you know, Nebraska fans themselves are so excited and so ready for it. It's that national media And they want to say Nebraska's not a relevant program and Scott Frost shouldn't have left UCF because they're a really great pro. They were stepping into a direction of becoming a really great program. But at the same time, if you have to, like, then sit there and talk about Nebraska and what they've done, how are they not? Like, if you're going to sit there and keep talking about Nebraska and how he shouldn't have gone, obviously they are somewhat relevant because if you would have gone to Troy or if he would have gone, you know, some small school, no one would have been like, oh wow, like that's where he's gonna go. But it's Nebraska, like, of course there's gonna be an eruption of emotion from not only the fans but the national media. That's just how it's gonna work.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, huge topic, a lot of people have opinions about that, been hitting Frost and Saban this whole week. Now we'll get into it a little bit more.
Let's just beat the dead horse. Yeah, we might as well. Why
we
not?
Might as well, you know? Summer months, baby. But no, we'll get into it a little bit with Brandon Vogel and Bill Dolman. Bill not too happy with my comments about saying that Colorado and Nebraska are a rivalry, even though that's not how it necessarily was intended, but
it's not
definitely shot me down
it,
for that one.
That's okay. But Brandon Vogel coming up after a short break here. We're going to talk Vedrill, no Vedrill, getting a scholarship. We're going to hit on Vogel's hot reads from this week. We ask him about the coming back, the Unity Council. Apparently, he hates ASU, so I've got to bring that up. And if Nebraska should claim their unclaimed titles. So we'll take a short break here, and Brandon Vogel of Hail Varsity next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Special edition of Hail Varsity Radio. Sorry, I wasn't sure if we were on there yet. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. Joining us now, Hail Varsity's managing editor, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Brandon Vogel. Vogues, how are you today?
I'm doing well. You guys are 20 minutes into this voyage. How did it go?
We are afloat. We haven't gone off air yet. We've been given the rest of the 2 hours, as far as I know, so here we are.
No one pounding on the door telling me to go to national programming yet. So.
And no angry callers, so unless you're our first one. So, Vogues, I want to stick with your hot reads from today. We'll probably touch on from earlier this week, too. But most interesting news, most breaking news, I'd say, for Nebraska is Vedrill being given his scholarship this week and his potential eligibility. What could the impact of that be, and have you heard any more on his potential immediate eligibility?
Yeah, nothing further today about the prospects of him being able to play right away. You know, Coach Frost revealed that when he is able to play, he'll be on scholarship. So that was, you know, good for him. UCF got go ahead and grant that release that allowed him to do that. You know, I was thinking about it today. Like, it's almost, I'm almost to a point where I've kind of progressed with the quarterback race where I'm not factoring him in anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you were to insert him back in there, it would certainly make things interesting because, you know, back when Nebraska started spring practice, I think I, like a lot of people, probably would have put him in the lead if you knew he was going to be able to play this season. Now, I mean, you probably still have to, but just seeing some of those other guys, the race probably got a little bit closer for me.
Gotcha. And Brandon, I was taking a look at the mailbag, and I noticed you didn't really get an answer to the question. So I was curious your thoughts on the one where they were just basically saying, is it more important for a fan base to have realistic expectations or to expect only the best from their team? Like, do you think Nebraska fans should, you know, expect a winning season or just, you know, not expect too much, just be happy with what you can get, maybe just staying competitive in these games?
Yeah, I had this week's mailbag out, but it was an interesting one for questions like that. I come down on I'm pretty pragmatic and measured, I think, for the most part. But playing judge and jury here, I'm like, have fun with it. Like, this is sports. You follow sports because it's supposed to be an outlet, a release, something you enjoy doing. So if you want to, you know, think Nebraska should be a 24-point favorite every time they play Ohio State, by all means, go ahead and do that. And maybe someday they will be. They haven't been at that spot recently, of course. But have fun with it. It should be good. It should be something stress-free. So I don't think you need to spend too much time worrying about, are my expectations here realistic?
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon, you touched on being a potentially a 24-point 24-point favorite, excuse me. And your hot reads from Wednesday this week with about points and offense and kind of where Nebraska has been compared to the national average since, was it 2009, 2008, right around that time? But what is kind of, you know, the comparison between what they're bringing from UCF and that, like, style of offense? And have you looked into other programs that kind of run a similar spread and, like, how they compare to the national average?
Yeah, so when you're talking about points, and this has held pretty steady since about 2009, you start at 28. That's like the average amount of points in for a college football offense every single year. So that's your baseline. Nebraska in 2014 was up around, I think it was 37, so about 9 points better than the average. And since then, which, you know, was the start of the Mike Riley era, kind of fell off a cliff all the way down to 24 or 25 last year, which may not seem like a huge deal, but it's tough to win games as we saw on the field when you're only scoring that much. So this staff, of course, comes from UCF, where they averaged 50 points for most of the season, and, you know, ended up, I think, at 48.8 once it was all said and done. So that's where they're coming from. And that was really, I don't care who you play, like what conference you're in, to be able to hit those kind of numbers is something we see kind of reserved for Baylor, when Baylor was really going, and Oregon, of course. Occasionally Ohio State gets that close. So that's kind of the top of the range there. And it's going to take Nebraska a while to get there. Talking to Coach Walters before the Peach Bowl, I don't think even the staff at UCF saw them getting quite that high that quickly. So it'll be interesting to watch for Nebraska how quickly that number starts to come up here. And I think they'll get over 28 right away in year one. I don't know how much past that, though, they'll be able to go. We'll see.
Brandon, one guy that could have helped contribute to that possibly could have been Maurice Washington. We talked a lot about him this week and his issue and whatnot. And sparking from that, Frost said he was interested in bringing back the Unity Council. Can you go a little bit deeper on that and just tell us where that originated and what it really entails?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know exactly when it first started, but I think you started to hear a lot about it on those, you know, in the 1990s. So maybe a little bit, a season or two before Nebraska's title run. And it became essentially a way for the team to hold itself accountable. So when you had instances where maybe a guy violated team rules, it would go to a vote. The team, it was just kind of a way to make things a little bit more democratic, I guess, rather than just have the head coach kind of deciding, here's what happens, here's why, because the why there is only I'm the head coach and it's what I decided. So that's kind of the general idea. And I think, you know, that the most interesting thing about that is not that it's coming back, because it seems like a pretty obvious idea that has a certain amount of appeal, but that Frost views the team is not quite ready for it yet. I don't know exactly what that means. It may just be sort of that's a goal for us, but the one that's further down the line. You know, when I look at this Nebraska team, I think, and we've heard, you know, Coach Frost say he's pretty optimistic about how quickly they can get things kind of moving in the right direction. But you get the sense that the kind of immediate goal is, like, let's get this team, let's get this group of guys in the physical shape we need so we can do the things we want to do. Getting them into that kind of physical point, I think, is step one.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Managing Editor. Brandon, going through, like I said, I've kind of been looking at all your hot reads, just trying to kind of pick and choose little bits to go off of. But in one of your grab bags, and you had mentioned this Unity Council kind of started during the title runs in the 90s. But Tom Osborne had said in an interview that 82 and 93 were two of their best teams that didn't win a title. And then obviously you've got the dead horse that we're going to beat of Frost and Saban and unclaimed titles and claimed titles. Yeah. And how Nebraska has 9 unclaimed titles. So just kind of where you're at with that, and when should we petition for Bill Moose to claim all 9 of those titles?
we can start that. We might as well start that now. Well, we're already talking about this and making everyone, making everyone who's not a fan of one of the teams involved angry, which is always going to happen with any sort of claimed national title talk. We might as well do it now. Well, Nebraska and Scott Frost and Nick Saban and all those names are in the news for our doing it. I was kind of shocked, even though I shouldn't have been, when I got an ESPN text alert telling me that, you know, Scott Frost said not all of Alabama's titles were valid. And then my response was, really, we're gonna keep doing this. But I guess I'm part of the problem because I wrote about it this morning too. So, although that was intended to be mostly a joke. So I never had a problem with what UCF did, and from this perspective, I think it's totally legitimate. There's no meaningful path to the playoff right now for a group of five team. Like, for UCF to legitimately make it, they basically would have had to, say Frost was still there, come back and do the exact same thing. And then maybe if they'd won, you know, 25 straight games and had a good enough win on the non-conference schedule, maybe they could get consideration for a playoff spot. But that part of it has always bothered me. So let's continue to push the narrative here that UCF deserved at least a shot, because I think that's true, whether it's UCF or Boise or whoever is the next one to come along.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brandon, we also talked about this, I think it was yesterday or Wednesday on the show. We know that Nebraska will be playing Colorado this year and the next, and then we'll have Oklahoma coming up. And we've just been asking everyone, what would your ideal non-conference matchup for Nebraska be? Would you want to restore that Texas and Nebraska rivalry? Would you want to see Nebraska Notre Dame or a potential Nebraska Alabama matchup? What would be on your wish list?
Yeah, it's a Nebraska Alabama potential home and home would be pretty interesting. Those two programs haven't played since the 70s. I think Paul Meyerberg of USA Today may have mentioned Nebraska LSU, which would be a ton of fun too. I tend to look at those things as let's get a program in here that Nebraska hasn't played a ton, because I also want to use it as an opportunity to go to a sort of an iconic place that I haven't been yet, and LSU certainly fits that bill. I'm actually pretty excited for Nebraska's trip to Cincinnati for that reason. You know, well, it's almost a decade away still. But Nipper Stadium in Cincinnati is a pretty old, cool, historic place. So people may not have been that excited about that one, but it's on the list for me.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon, we'll try to get you out on this. I was reading at the bottom of your, it was 4 or 5 days ago. Like I said, I've been really skimming through these hot reads and making sure I hit everything. But I got down to the part about Herm Edwards and him talking about the logo, and personally, the
Colton's fuming by the way, right now, just so you can paint a picture in your mind.
I took Arizona State kind of under my wing last year, and I have a hoodie that's got Sparky on it, so it's not just the logo, but I just kind of wanted to know why you hate Arizona State. Is it a shot at me, or what's the deal there?
No, I love Arizona State. They're like a brother who has wronged me, because Sparky is such a great logo. I loved their uniforms, the classic ones, the Pat Tillman era, mm-hmm. the uniforms they wore when they famously beat Nebraska, you know, yellow helmet, devil on the side. All of that was great. And then they come out with this Pitchfork logo, which Pitchforks are cool, but it's got this weird like design that runs counter to the actual Pitchforks. I call it the Rocket Fork, and I hate it because the other one was just so good. It's not even that this one's that bad. The other one was just so good, and they threw it in the trash. I'll never forgive them, but it can all be undone by just going back to the old logo. And then they'll be one of my favorite teams from a visual perspective.
That's Brandon Vogel, statistician and Hail Varsity logo expert. Brandon, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
No doubter is right. He took a while to get out of the batter's box there. It was, he knew it right off the bat. That ball was hit very, very well. I think he, did he say, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?
And welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio. It's good having Brandon Vogel on. Some great insight in about, what do we want to say here? 20 minutes, we'll have Bill Dolman on in our conversation with him. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. If you'd like to call in, 466-3776, Schillingburg, Cork, and Tap House lets you do that. 800-825-5865. At Two Birds, One Stone on Twitter, at Danny Burke 5. And as you heard there, that was the Altavilla home run from last week that got him. Sat down after a bat flip, and he stared at the pitch or at the hit for a while. And I guess the reason we're coming back to it, not necessarily because, you know, Nebraska baseball is really in contention for anything at the moment, but the reason we're coming back to it is I've been having discussions with multiple people and kind of how the MLB and the NFL has kind of been operating their, you know, uniform and the way they do things, and then kind of versus how Adam Silver's been running the NBA. And it's kind of just, it's about like personality. And I think the issue that we've been seeing in not only professional sports, but potentially college athletics is the removal of personality in sports. Like, I get that they were an 11th place team. I get that they weren't very good. But he was also hitting like 152 over some kind of a stretch of games. And they're college kids. You can't control the emotions of an 18 to a 22-year-old. As we've said, I don't know how many times on this show, however many times I've said to people before, it's just one of those things. You don't know how someone's going to react to something. You don't know if they're going to be extremely excited. You don't know if they're going to be bummed out about it. But you also can't, like, a bat flip or staring at a home run, are you afraid it's going to hurt the pitcher's feelings? Like, at the same time, like, you know, sports, we aren't trying to protect, you know, oh, well, the pitcher's going to be sad if you stare at it, or the catcher's going to get upset if he watches you crush 1450 over the right field wall. Like, it's sports. Let them have fun. Like, let them play. Like, I don't know why that stems into professional sports too, but even then, like, I get you sign contracts and that stuff. It's a job. So I get, like, the Yankees don't let you have facial hair. You have to shave, stuff like that. But outside of that, you're going to tell someone they can't be who they are. Like, yeah. That's I don't think you can put that in writing anywhere.
No, it's ridiculous. And here's my thing on it. Going back to Altavilla's bat flip, if you even can call it a bat flip, okay.
It's like a bat drop, right? Almost. Like a mic drop is almost,
yeah,
what it was.
I get Erstad's persona. I really do. In the struggling Huskers, I understand it. But from a batter's perspective, it's not more that he's showing it off in your face. And I don't even think it was a bad bat flip. He kind of just like tossed you. He held on to it a little bit too long. So I didn't even think it was that bad when I saw it. When I think of a bad flip that gets you taken out of the game, I think of Batista just throwing it in the playoffs or whatever.
Anybody in the Korean baseball organization.
That too. But so, and another reason he might do that is because you said he was struggling hitting. So he hits and he's more just like a, you know, thank you, finally. You know, it's not like a, screw you, buddy, I'm tossing. Yeah, it's like, it's finally, it's a lift off your shoulders.
Yeah, it's a monkey off your back. You finally got something to go your way. Like, everyone that's ever played baseball has been in a slump, mm-hmm. or has been in a position where, can I just get one?
Right.
And then you finally do, and it's like, okay, whether you get another one after that or not, you just, like, it kind of rebuilds your confidence. Mm-hmm. And if you're batting 152 over however many games it took, like, that's...
Yeah, and then if you take him out after, what does that say about, you know, building his confidence back up? Now he's going to always have that thought in the back of his head, might be a little more stiff the next time he goes up to bat.
I can't have a personality.
Right,
I
can't have fun.
Yeah.
No, but I get both sides to the arguments, and this is going to transition into the MLB. So with my beloved Cubbies, Wilson Contreras is being targeted for wearing his Venezuela arm sleeve, and they're saying he can't wear that. Ben Zobrist has been wearing these cleats that for some reason the MLB doesn't like, because it needs to have a certain amount of apparel from the MLB or from your own organization on it. And he's been doing it for the past couple years or whatever, but now they're really coming down on him for it. And that prompted me to ask Colton, you know, like, is the MLB turning in toward the NFL, you know, the no fun league? What's going on here with the MLB? I don't really get, I get it like branding wise, but come on, is it that big of a deal when they have the Mother's Day, they have all the pink bats, everybody swags themselves out with that and they love it.
See, and if it's the organization's idea, it's totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's for breast cancer awareness. Okay, that's fine.
Like, that makes sense, but...
Remember, who was it? D'Angelo Williams? Like, he lost his mother, I believe, to a battle with breast cancer. And so he like, dyed the tip of his hair pink, and he wore, like, pink gloves. And they're like, no, you can only do that in October.
Right, and that's like Antonio Brown was wearing certain cleats, I think, for just fundraising certain charities and getting fined for that, too, wasn't
it? And see, so now they changed it to, like, during week 12 and week like 15, you can wear a shoe for your charity or for this or whatever, for your like, so they're leaning towards like, okay, like if it's for a cause, if it's not just like I'm gonna come out in 24 karat gold cleats like Marshawn Lynch want to do. And I get that, but like you're saying, for the MLB, I just happened to Google like MLB's like uniform guidelines, and some of them were like pointed out as like the one about shoes, at least 51% of the exterior of each player's shoes must be the club's designated primary shoe color, and a portion of the club's designated primary shoe color must be evenly distributed throughout the exterior of each shoe.
It's ridiculous.
Why?
Like, the clothing apparel that you're going to see the least amount on them. And well, I guess it depends who you are, if you're a sneakerhead or whatnot. But,
it's true.
You know, for baseball, it's different. You're not really fascinated by the cleats as much as you would be for football or basketball, where it's a little bit bigger deal. So I just think it's outrageous, and it translates from the bat flips, from the shoes, from everything, the sleeve, you know. It's just like, it seems like it's becoming a trend now with every sport at every level.
Yeah, and I just think that, like, you know, again, if we want to like set uniform standards for baseball, everyone should wear their pants so their socks show. I think, like, if we're going to do that, we might as well implement some things that are cool. No. I like when their socks show.
Oh, I mean, I like when their socks show, too, but I feel like they would restrict them to, like,
oh, yeah, they'd show. Probably, if it was the MLB, it's probably going the other way. They don't want anybody to have fun. But I just think that, like, Adam Silver, and I've said this multiple times, Adam Silver has done the best job as far as being a commissioner, because it's not that he's let players in the NBA do whatever the hell they want. But he's gone, okay, you want to wear shirts that like have some kind of a protest or meaning to it? Do it in the pregame. You want to dunk during pregame? Do it. Like, you can do these things. Like, be yourself. Warm up how you need to. Do whatever you need to. Because he's like, they obviously respect Adam Silver, and the NBA hasn't like lost viewership. If anything, they've gained way more. There's just personalities in the NBA, and there's people that you care to watch. Whether you hate LeBron, you're still going to turn it on when he's playing because you want to see what's going to happen, whether you want him to win or lose. That's just the entertainment value.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I don't know, but it all just stems from just so many things, and it just keeps trickling down and younger and younger. And when are we just going to limit our kids from having fun? And I say our kids like I'm a father or something, but no, just
your
like,
father.
Like, just limiting people from having fun. I don't know. I think it's crazy. I think, you know, being able to express yourself and let yourself loose is the majority of the reason why you play sports, because you leave it all on the field and you can be yourself. You can be a different person than what you can be inside the classroom, walking down the street, anything like that. So
we're going to take a short timeout. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Speaking of expression and feelings, we will talk about our first sports heartbreaks coming up in the last segment.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio. I'm Danny Burke alongside Colton Stone, taking over the show for Schmitty today. You can find us at Twitter, at DannyBurke5, at TwoBirds1Stone. And speaking of Schmitty, just sent me a nice little text picture. I think it's Junior there getting an autograph from Giancarlo Stanton. And then Aroldis Chapman pitching. It looks like they're right next to him there.
I wish I knew the Yankees roster better, because then I could confirm, but maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know?
So that reminded me, though.
How many beers deep do you think Schmidt is right now?
Oh, he's got to be nearing double digits. But I don't know, though. He's with the kids, so it depends if someone else is supervising.
That's true. I guess someone has to drive him home, right?
Yeah, he did tell me. He said cheers earlier today, and it was pretty early. So who knows when he started by now. But so, no, and then
road beer.
You prompted the question, our first sports heartbreak, and Schmitty and Dr. Petey were talking about it yesterday, and then this even translated into that, too. Aroldis Chapman being on the Cubs, not that that was a heartbreak. He almost contributed it to it. With Rajay Davis, the 3-run home run. Cubs luckily won that World Series. But I was telling them, of course, mine was Steve Bartman back in 2003. or just any other time the Cubs broke my heart, which was a lot. But that was the main
the
one.
The Cubs, it's just...
Yeah, it's just heartbreak city, the Cubs. But luckily, our luck's been turning around in recent years, knock on wood. But no, so yeah, that was a big one for me. Colton, how about yourself?
Any of the Bill Callahan years.
Okay. I think that's what a lot of people said.
Yeah. Well, here's where I go, and it's something that, unfortunately, I probably relive too often, is the 2009 Big 12 championship game where there was 1 second left on the clock. And the reason that it angers me so much isn't the fact that Texas got that second added back on. It's that 1 second shouldn't have mattered. It's the fact that Alex Henry had four field goals, but that means they were in the red zone enough times that they should have been scoring touchdowns and not field goals. So it's not the fact that they lost by that way. I mean, it adds to it. It definitely is like, here's a fire and let's just keep dumping gasoline on it. But it's the fact of how they could have won the game and then lost. And also in that same year, I am fully assimilating back into a Phillies fan. I admit I accepted it yesterday. And so when my heart is broken at the end of this year also.
Because they won yesterday, you're like, you know what? They're looking decent.
I started really liking them when I was kind of the middle school
Ryan
age.
Howard.
Yeah. Jimmy Rollins, like my favorite player of all time. So one of them, other than Ken Griffey Jr. And, that same year they won in 2008, and I was like, this is going to be good. They're going to come back, and they might win a second one, and the Yankees beat them like 4-1 in the series. And I was like, okay, and then Texas happened. I was like, okay, just not this year. None of the years. And NFL, I don't even talk. Washington's terrible, so I don't even go there. But
So there's your baseball and football. My football would just be 06 when the Bears lost the Super Bowl. Devin Hester brings the kick back. Right, then you're thinking, all right, we're taking down Peyton Manning and the Colts, and fortunately, not so good. I mean, although my hopes weren't too high because we still had Rex Grossman as our quarterback. But then basketball-wise, for me, just any time that the Bulls would face LeBron, so that whole Derrick Rose era, LeBron making the game winner over Jimmy Butler at home, if we would have won that, we could have done it. Derrick Rose tearing his ACL, I was distraught for months.
Yeah, I'd say probably basketball would be Dwayne Wade leaving before he came back. Now I'm happy, but probably the two times they lost when they should have won four titles in a row, but whatever. You win some,
not
you lose
one.
Some.
Not
so,
two. Not three.
Two. Only
yeah,
two.
Only two.
So in about 8 minutes, we'll have Bill Dolman coming up at the start of the hour, and this has been our first hour taking over, and we're happy to be back for another hour. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome back to Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. You can find us on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at Danny Burke, correct?
At Danny Burke 5.
At Danny Burke 5. Joining us is the pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, Bill Dolman, at Bill Dolman on Twitter. And Billy D, how are you today?
I'm just proud of you guys for finally kicking Schmidt out of the booth.
That's what I'm saying. It was only a matter of time, and we finally mustered up the courage and got him out of here.
Well, it takes a while to put the coup together, but he had it coming.
It just took one swift kick to the backside, and we sent him down sent him down I-29 to Kansas City. So, Bill, they came out yesterday, and I believe it was Tom Chattel that wrote the article for it, but the potential of Frank Solich being invited back to the Outland Trophy ceremony to accept the Tom Osborne Award. It'd be his first time coming back since 2003. Kind of what is your reaction what do you think about the possibility of Frank Solich coming back?
Well, I think it would be a great gesture. I think it's long overdue. I can certainly understand why he hasn't wanted to come back over the last 15 years or so. But I think most of those bad apples have been tossed from the basket and aren't there any longer. And I think that you have people who understand the culture of Nebraska football as it was for the 30 years that Frank Solich was around Nebraska football. So I think that whatever they could do to bring him back, to say, look, this is still hopefully a home for you, that you realize that there are a lot more people around here who have always been here, who love Frank Solich, respected Frank Solich, and never really wanted Frank to leave. Certainly the way he was let go, what was it, 2003 now? I mean, that's such a long time ago, was as embarrassing a chapter, not just in Nebraska football history, but I think in college football history, the way that whole thing was handled. We kind of all saw it. I shouldn't say all of us, but I think that there were some people who saw it coming, who maybe knew the backstory, and saw that no matter what Frank did that year, he could have been, you know, won the national championship, and I'm guessing the personalities that be that were in power at the time probably would have come to the same decision that they made. I think it would be a great thing, and I think it'd be a great thing if they could maybe one day, and who knows how much longer Frank's going to coach, although he looks the same now as he did 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be great if Nebraska and Ohio play. And I think he would be received incredibly warmly by the Nebraska football family. And I do. I think it's long overdue, and I hope he understands that.
And, Bill, when Frost got hired, he really emphasized bringing back a lot of the players from the 90s and coaches such as Frank Solich, and that's what he really wants to implement with this new program coming in under his helm. Do you see any other players coming back or want to see any specific ones, and do you imagine there will be a lot more getting recognized more so?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, to say who that would be, I think, is kind of an impossibility. But it sure does seem as though the door is open now, more so than it has been for the last 15 years or more. You know, I can remember when I was going to school there and working in the athletic department, and there were former players around all the time and populating the sidelines at games. But I remember hearing stories through the four-year case of the flu and beyond where, you know, players would call and they would be honored. You know, there would be have been invited to come back, but then they got to buy tickets, come at their own expense. They had to get passes and, you know, and all kinds of really odd things for those guys to be, you know. Well, they said they were welcomed back, but I don't think they ever really were. But to think of guys having to check in, get IDs, and go through a clearance and pay their way, it just seemed to be a really odd way of doing business if you want to maintain a relationship with those people who made the program great. And even those who may have suffered through some tough times, you know, prior to the 1970s. Everybody, the door should be open to all those guys, to me, at all times. And, you know, I think that there are plenty of walk-ons who never made big headlines who ought to be able to be a part of what the program is about now, because certainly those guys were the backbone of the football program. And I hope the door is open. And I think the gesture when Scott got hired to see those, what was it, 100 guys who came back to greet him, and it was a great idea, whoever came up with it. And Bill Moose certainly signed off on it. And I think it's been said before that Bill Moose seems like a Nebraskan who's just hasn't lived there before. I think that might be appropriate. I think Bill Moose gets it, and he may be learning the way, but he has certainly, you know, been in step since he's been there, at least from my vantage point.
Bill Dolman with us, kind of sticking with the whole Frost and, you know, that the relevancy, the players from the 90s, old players, all that. I know you said it, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago when we had you on, but the whole, you know, if Nebraska's not relevant, why are we still asking Scott Frost about UCF and national titles and all that? And obviously now that's it's Frost's word against Saban's word. Kind of what is... I know we've probably got into it so much, but what's your take on Frost and Saban now exchanging words about this?
I think this is one of the most ridiculous slow news periods that I can remember in college football. And again, I go back to what I have said, and you just mentioned it. Nebraska football is relevant and always has been, even in the down times, but it is certainly back to being at the front of the headlines again. And when I opened up my laptop the other day and, you know, was perusing the headlines, and I see Frost such and such, Frost whatever, Saban responds to Frost. I'm like, are you kidding me? Why is this even a topic of conversation? And maybe Scott needs to just go, look, I'm done talking about this, okay? But clearly the national sports media has an infatuation with him. There's no doubt about it. I think if you were to ask any sports talk show host in the country, okay, I don't care what section, north, south, east, west, border to border, coast to coast, would you like to talk with Nebraska football coach Scott Frost? They would jump at it, okay? Now, if you were to ask them if you would like to talk to Minnesota head coach P.J. Fleck, not really, but, you know, we'll keep it in mind, right? We'd like you to – Kevin Sumlin. I'm not sure that there's anybody right now that moves the dial, other than maybe Nick Saban and Chip Kelly, that would get people saying, yes, we want to talk to him right now. That's what I get right now from the national media. When I see Scott Frost naming the headlines in the middle of May, then there must be some relevancy to Nebraska football and a complete infatuation with him. Now, my fear is, okay, should things not go well, say, out of the gate, then they're going to turn on him, you know. And I think it's the Tebow syndrome. Tim Tebow was built up to be, you know, something, you know, beyond anything we'd ever seen, with godlike status, and I don't mean that in a religious sense, although with him it would be applicable. During his playing days at Florida, Tim Tebow, everything he did made a headline. And then once he got to the NFL, everybody, including ESPN, that had built him up, began to tear him down because he wasn't necessarily a great NFL quarterback. And then he goes to play minor league baseball. Well, they ripped on him, da-da-da-da-da. So my fear is for Scott Frost is that he has the media infatuated with him right now. But if something goes wrong and say Nebraska goes 6-6, 7-5, and God forbid 5-7 or whatever it might be, then it's going to be, well, what is, you know, it was a bad hire, and we told him he should have gone to Florida, should have taken this job or that job, and they'll turn on him. But right now, he is the hot name in coaching. And the fact that this whole thing about UCF continues to be a topic of conversation, and they go to Alabama to respond, and then they go back to Scott to respond, and they've got some tainted titles. I mean, this to me is as stupid of a sports topic as I can recall in the last, I don't know, 40 years.
And, Bill, so with these comments, a lot of people are kind of joking, but also pretty serious about hoping to see a Nebraska-Alabama matchup maybe in the future. We were talking about it earlier this week, your ideal non-conference opponents that you would maybe like to see Nebraska restore their rivalries with being, you know, Texas. We're going to see Colorado these years, Oklahoma coming up.
Whoa. Hey. There is no rivalry with Colorado, okay? I don't know what you guys grew up knowing, but that's just not a rivalry. In fact, I'll give you this example. I just bought a house out here in Colorado, and I'm moving in just a little bit, and I met my neighbors, okay? Some young guys, probably in their mid-20s. They're renting Scarlet and Cream. Renting a house next to me, and two of them happen to be from Tulsa. And they were talking about, they found out I was from Nebraska, talking about how their parents told them how great the Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry was and how they should respect it. It was a wonderful conversation. And I said something, it's much more of a rivalry than whatever they think out here with Nebraska and Colorado. And all three of them are like, there's no rivalry with Nebraska and Colorado. And exactly. There's not. And one of them grew up, you know, out here. So anyway, there's no rivalry with Colorado. I'm glad we're playing them. All right. That'll be a nice early season game. But to say it's the renewal of the great Nebraska-Colorado rivalry, they talk about out here 62-36 all the time. Like that's the be-all to end-all moment of that series. I say my favorite score is, what was it, 49-18. Okay. That's what I believe the series is. 49 wins, 18 losses, and a couple of ties. All right? And a ton of wins after the McCartney, Neuheisel, Barnett era was in place. So there's never been a Nebraska-Colorado rivalry.
All right. Well, discluding the Colorado rivalry, going back.
Oh my God! You said it again.
All right, non-rivalry. Just going. What you think? What would be your wish list kind of to see Nebraska play? A lot of people said Nebraska versus Texas, Nebraska versus Notre Dame, and that we mentioned Nebraska versus Alabama. Who would you love to see Nebraska play in the upcoming years?
Well, I think it would be great if Nebraska played Oklahoma again, and I know they are, but I think a little more frequently. I know that's not going to be an annual game, But I think that that would be a great thing, and I think it would be a lesson learned, that there would be lots of stories written about what a college football rivalry really is. So I look forward to those Nebraska-Oklahoma games. I'd love to see Nebraska play Miami with a little more regularity, or Florida State. Now, I think the Alabama thing would be fun, because I remember when they played Alabama in 77 and 78. I remember the bowl game, actually, if you even want to go before then. But I think that'd be fun. I think it'd be fun to play some of those teams in the Northeast, just to teach them what football is all about, like Syracuse, you know. But I think Miami and Oklahoma and Alabama would be at the top of my list. Missouri, that was always a great Big 12 rivalry. So, you know, games like that would be fun.
Bill, we'll try to get you out on some pro sports here. A lot of people thought they'd immediately be down 0-2 as they'd go on the road and losing home court advantage, essentially. But what is your take on the Rockets and the Warriors series as they're tied 1-1 going into Sunday?
If the Rockets had not won game two, and I think even in the manner that they did, because, you know, they won by, what, 22, 20? They won fairly handily. I think if they win that game but eke by, I think that would have been a bad thing. But I think by winning the way they did in the second game, that kind of gives them an upper, I shouldn't say an upper hand, but gives them some momentum that they're more than competitive, that they are as good as Golden State. You know, and really both games were somewhat similar in that both teams had starters in each game that just did not perform very well. I think in the second game, Golden State had just two of their five starters, you know, scoring double figures. Mm-hmm. Whereas you go back to game one, I think P.J. Tucker and Trevor Ariza were in single digits. So I think to a certain extent, Houston can take, you know, some momentum with them to Oakland, given the fact that they were so dominant in that second game. I think Houston, for the most part in that second game, did what Houston does, and they won handily. So I think that series, even though that Houston lost home court with that game one loss, I think that's still going to go all the way to a game seven. I think that's going to be pretty close.
Bill Dolman with us on Hail Varsity. I need your prediction, though, tonight for the Cavs, or tomorrow night, excuse me, for the Cavs and the Celtics, and then the Knights against the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Who you like?
Well, I think Cleveland has to play well and has to win at home. So I would think that they do get the win here. Now, it might be a deal where it's very similar to Houston and Golden State, where, you know, Cleveland wins the first one, they make it 2-1, and then Boston comes back, and that team plays with a ton of heart. And they go back to Boston up 3-1. I can see that happening. As far as the Golden Knights go, I've said it many times on the show, this is one of the great sports stories of the last, well, ever maybe. What is it, 2-1 in the series?
Yeah.
They're playing in Vegas again. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any reason at all to count them out of anything at this point anymore. If they win this, if they go up 3-1, I think it's over.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I think there's no reason why they should not be, you know, if they win the Stanley Cup, it is not an upset by any stretch of the imagination. And no matter who they play, at this point, they're as good as anybody that's played this year and anybody that's left.
Well, Bill, always good talking to you. We'll probably have the chance to catch up with you next week, whether it's Danny or I or Chris or whoever it is. So
I don't want to talk to Chris anymore. I'm
just
done.
Us?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Well, hopefully you don't have to open your laptop to Frost said or Saban said about Frost this upcoming week. But
My gosh.
Enjoy rugby today and enjoy some Vegas Knights hockey, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, guys. Thank you.
We're back.
Fellas, think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Continuing hour two, thanks to Bill Dolman, the Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, and just moving forward here, Hail Varsity Radio without Chris Schmidt, and Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke, Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. Tap the line 402-466-3776, toll free 800-825-5865, 466-3776. Find us on Twitter at 2birds1stone. at Danny Burke 5. And we can pose our second question of the day. I guess our first one was, are we Frost crazy? But I guess our upcoming one would be, who would you like to see Nebraska play either frequently or every so often in non-conference? And as I was going through, and you know, like I said, I tried to get as much of Vogel's hot reads as I could in the 13 minutes we had with him, and I think I got a decent amount of them.
Yeah, and you snuck in your Arizona State fan in there too.
Had to make sure I got that one in there. But as I was going through, earlier this week, he was talking about who everyone in the Big Ten plays in non-conference. Mm-hmm. And then I forget the account that tweeted this out, but it was all the teams that don't play FCS schools, FBS teams that don't play FCS schools.
Right.
There were no SEC teams on the list. 12 of the 14 Big Ten teams were on that list. They do not play an FCS team. Illinois does, and Iowa does. Iowa plays UNI. They almost tried to not get out of the state of Iowa for their non-conference. They're playing Iowa State, UNI, and then Northern Illinois. But not to say Nebraska's got, you know, a hard non-conference, but Akron, Colorado, Troy was, they beat LSU last year.
That's right, yeah.
And they're a fairly decent program. Colorado was really good 2 years ago. Last year they had kind of a...
It's Bill Dolman's favorite rivalry matchup right there.
Yeah, don't mention Colorado and rivalry in the same sentence unless it's Colorado is not a rivalry with Nebraska. And then Akron finished, I think, 7-5 last year or somewhere in the MAC. So MAC teams are always a surprise. You never know what's going to happen. But it brings up that question, who should Nebraska play in non-conference? I mean, you're getting to see Maryland, which 2 years in a row they're playing Texas. Why couldn't Nebraska do a home and home with Texas? Texas is doing that with Alabama now, so we actually get to see the Crimson Tide go on the road for once to play a non-conference game. They'll try to weasel their way into playing that at Jerry World or neutral stadium or whatever it may be. But Danny, I know you aren't like, you know, you're not Husker mania, Husker craze or anything like that, but are, you know, of what you've heard, are there any teams that you'd like to see Nebraska play?
Yeah, so I've emphasized it on the show. I grew up a Notre Dame fan, you know, born and raised with my dad and my grandpa, that Irish bloodline.
We're going to have to cut your mic, I think.
Yeah, a bunch of my friends are Michigan, and they're telling me to shout them out on the air. I said, not a chance I can do that. But no, so I would always be battling against them. But then I heard, of course, just coming here about the old rivalries between Notre Dame and Nebraska. So for the two teams that, you know, I grew up with Notre Dame, then I go to school here. So I'd like to see them play each other. Yeah. I think that would be fun to restore that. And then just because of the history as well as this, I don't have any connection with Texas, but I'd love to see Nebraska and Texas. I've heard stories from a bunch of my friends going to those games back in the day and just the stands just going nuts and just a lot of hatred. So.
I don't think I could do it again because you watch them in 2009 lose that close one, and in 2010 they lose at home when they are like stringing together some wins, and then they drop one to Texas, and it's just – Heartbreak City. I know you said that about Chicago, but Nebraska, Texas is Heartbreak City.
Exactly.
But it's always a good matchup. Like, that's the thing is you kind of never know what's going to happen. You don't know if it's going to be only field goals for the whole game or if it's going to be a blowout. And I feel like that's kind of how some of their conference opponents are. That's why it's different to see, you know, the non-conference opponents and everything. But, like, Wisconsin, it seems like year after year, it's like, if Nebraska actually put something together, this could be really close. And then you get the years where Melvin Gordon runs for 406 yards or whatever it was, something crazy. So, like, you never know. It's like, that's within the conference, though. Mm-hmm. And I know we brought up, like, what about the potential of playing Iowa at the beginning of the year? What about the potential of, you know, playing someone like that, you know, playing Wisconsin to open the season? Like, that can set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And it could also derail your season, too, if you immediately lose to, like, a powerhouse in the conference. Because if you lose to Wisconsin week one, how are you going to regain to win the West, you know? But it'd be interesting to see something like that if they aren't going to open with tough non-conference opponents, right?
Yeah. It would be interesting to see them just kind of fluctuate the schedule and, you know, make them work for it a little bit harder at the beginning of the season, I guess you could say. But you can't really say that for Nebraska last season.
We're playing... Troy, we're playing Elon, and we're playing Eastern Washington. Yeah. You know what the worst part is depending on what school you are and you play some of those, it might be tough games. Like, mm-hmm. Eastern Washington's not a bad program. Right. North Dakota State's not like when Iowa
they're
lost to them.
They're all the trap games, man.
Yeah, well, and you're like, oh, they're FCS. They can't be the same. It's like, these are the guys that, like, probably should have gone to small D1 school. They're like, but I'm going to go to a winning program like North Dakota State.
Yeah.
And then they're just going to go beat Kansas, beat Iowa. And I know they're not beating, like, you know, they're not going to beat Alabama, but, like, they're still beating top-level, like, D1 schools. So it's always interesting to see stuff like that. But getting a – and I know this is kind of, you know, bias or whatever, but, you know, getting, like, that Renew ASU versus Nebraska, like, getting that back, something mm-hmm. like that, something like
– Who are you going to root for, man?
I'll wear one of those sewn-together jerseys.
Oh, the half and half.
Yeah, I'll do like
geez.
Yeah, I'll do like a
the worst kind of person.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's a house divided kind of thing.
That's what it was for me. My sister went to Iowa, so she managed to find a flag that was half Nebraska, half Iowa. My parents have it hanging up in their basement.
Those. Yeah, they shouldn't sell one of those. That's
yeah,
just wrong.
Something else, man.
But you can get Colorado, Nebraska. It's not a rivalry.
Right.
But I guess kind of what sparks this, who they should play, who we should hate, who should be a rival, whatever. I know we're probably going to just keep saying it. SB Nation, whatever. But they've been coming out with some interesting articles this week because of the whole unclaimed national titles. They came out with teams that could claim unclaimed national titles if they really, really wanted to. But it's introducing like NFL rivalries and an NFL hate week to where, for example, a rivalry you'd say of
Bears-Packers.
Bears-Packers. So the Bears-Packers either going to play week one or they're going to play week 17. Like, that would build up the anticipation for it. And, you know, if everyone's playing their rivalry one of those weeks or, you know, your division opponents are your rivals. So if you're playing week one, middle of the week or middle of the season and then the last week, like, you kind of know where they are. But you made the good point that, you know, then you don't get home advantage. You don't get to you don't get to play them twice, you know, then you're only basing who wins the division off of three games. But they make a good point, too, throughout here is if you play twice, the most likely scenario of what's going to happen is they're going to split 1-1 and everyone's going to end up 3-3 in the division. So I like the fact that, like, let's bolster these rivalries. Let's do that. But at the same time, it just feels like because it's a profession and it's a job and whatever it may be, that it's easier to do that in college.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to say, you know, Nebraska, Oklahoma, let's do that every year. Nebraska, Iowa, let's do that every year, but let's only do it once. And even in the Big Ten, like even if it's a rivalry, unless it's a crossover rivalry, you're only going to see them one year or one time a year, or maybe once every couple of years, unless it's in the Big Ten championship. Right. And so I like this whole idea of, let's play rivals, but I don't think you can really ditch the whole division system. Otherwise, you might as well just make it 16, you know, NFC, 16 yeah. AFC, and there's no division at all.
Yeah, no, see, it's good thinking. It's interesting thinking, trying to spark something different with the NFL, yeah. Maybe get their ratings up even a little bit more, make, you know, all these games, not all these games, but just put more tension on certain games rather than, oh, it doesn't matter because we get to play them again. I understand that. But like you said, I think it would be too much problems with the home field advantage. What if they're coming off a Thursday night game? What if they're coming off a Sunday night, Monday night, and then they have to go play their divisional opponent only that one time? Well, they're at a disadvantage then for the playoffs and for that game. They don't have as much time to prepare for it. Whereas if you still have the two, you get the rest of the season to prepare for it too. And then in that article, they brought up one of the subheadings was rivalries are about bragging rights and feeling superior to some teams you hate. There's no better way to encourage that than only playing once a year, he said. There's nothing fun about team splitting a series 1-1. See, and I don't really agree with that because what are the chances
that... You still get that win.
Yeah, and so, okay, maybe you lose and then, we got to wait till next year. If you have it twice, you look forward to it again, get the ratings up for that again, prepare for it, go nuts for it again, keep talking smack with your friends, keep building up that rivalry for that end of the year game. And then what if you can meet in the playoffs? You guys are tied 1-1, a tiebreaker in the playoffs. Nothing's more excited than that. So it is a flawed system. I like the idea of it. I just don't think it will ever come to fruition. It's a neat idea, but I just don't think it's necessary in the NFL.
I think what they should do is keep the system the same way, but maybe it is like your biggest rival, you either play week one in week 17 or you play them close together. What you see with a lot of schedules is like Atlanta and New Orleans, for example.
Sure.
So you take those two teams. A lot of years they've been playing like, oh, we're going to play week 14 and then week 17 or week 15 and week 17. Like they're playing so close together.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, saving the best for last, but it's one of those, it's like, well, those are the games people want. And if it's the NFC South, for whatever reason, is you can just close your eyes, pick a team, and that might be who wins it, but it might not be either. Who knows? And so it's exciting for that division specifically because it's always going to be close. So playing like all of your division games the last like 5 of 8 weeks is huge, and it's huge for ratings and money and the business and whatever. But I just think it's always going to be more of a college thing.
Yeah, and they even gave the example of, and we could say an example to Nebraska terms, Nebraska and Iowa every Thanksgiving time, you know, on Black Friday. What if they had that with an NFL team, the same two teams around that weekend, and just stack up the college football rivalries and then the NFL rivalries for that whole weekend? That'd be some wild stuff. I mean, that would be a lot of fun, but... Jeez, that'd be a jam-packed weekend.
That would be interesting to go basically Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it's all basically rivalry games. That wouldn't
You're
be
not
like
leaving
a
couch.
That wouldn't be a terrible idea if they're looking for, you know, ratings, like you said. But it's just the thing too is, you know, you don't play a certain team for 4 years, and maybe that's like a team that everyone wants to play or whatever it may be. But it's the same thing that's kind of happening with the non-conference of Nebraska. Everyone wants to play Oklahoma and Miami and Notre Dame and out like as much as possible. But those teams have to play other teams, and it's, you know, unless you're in the same conference, you just get the short end of the stick, and you just have to take what you can get. Basically, you take the rivalries and the good matchups where you can get them. So, yeah. I don't
interesting
know.
Topic, interesting question, but it's too much to go into.
I definitely think it's like college football and like college athletics is probably where those rivalries have to stick. So,
exactly.
Speaking of college athletics, we'll dive in a little bit to Nebraska basketball. We'll get a little bit of NBA, and we'll just kind of keep rolling with the second hour here. I'm Colton Stoney's Danny Burke, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Well, we've got about, what do you want to say, 20 minutes probably here that we've got left of our first show together. No Schmidt, just Colton Stone, Danny Burke.
Well, not our first show together, technically.
Well, you know what I mean. Our first Hail Varsity Radio show together.
I mean, if we're counting back at UNL, good old sports broadcasting class, I'd say that was a classic show right there, although our professor may beg to differ.
Hey, you know, as long as we get a B- on this one, too, we're keeping
That's
up
right.
with
we'll
the standard,
it.
I suppose.
Exactly,
right?
Above average.
Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Colton Stone, Danny Burke. You can find us on Twitter, at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. I want to say thanks to Brandon Vogel and thanks to Bill Dolman, as we've had them so far throughout the show. But staying with college athletics, I think that's kind of where we just have to lean towards, is we're trying to keep this as relevant to Nebraska as possible, is coming out with the Nebraska and Tim Miles saying the potential playing Duke, or they are playing Duke for the Big Ten ACC Challenge. And I think that...
Or no, well, they're not playing Duke. He said, we will play Duke, but... There's virtually no way that they will, because the way they paired up is the Big Ten and the ACC and their challenge. They try to get the one seeds versus the one seeds in each conference. So, you know, Nebraska not in that category.
Right, and that's why I said that the potential of I didn't know if he actually, like, they're trying to set it up. If they could try to set it up, that'd be sweet. But I guess kind of sticking with that non-conference. And I think as far as like scheduling for Nebraska, the like I was just saying over the break, is like they have to play these kinds of teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have to play the Dukes, the UNCs, the Kansas, the, you know, I know they're playing Michigan State and Michigan and those teams like in their conference, but like out of conference, I know there are those schools that, you know, they have the ability to go out and try to market for some reason to play them.
Mm-hmm.
And who are they hosting for?
Seton Hall.
Seton Hall.
Gabbett. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, they're getting schools like that, even schools from the Big East. I know they play Creighton fairly often, but, like, you know, Nebraska has to play those kinds of schools. Like, they, and I think people really look forward to it, especially like Kansas. Everyone was super pumped that it was a home and home with Kansas. And that's just like, it was, they were 1 point away from from winning probably the biggest game of the season.
And making the NCAA tournament, arguably. But, no, I think you're right. You do probably have to play those teams either, you know, at least once a year, not counting your Big Ten opponents who are going to be in the top 25 every year, your Michigan States, your Michigans, your Purdue's. So we had Kansas last year, potentially Duke. Miles said he would love to play them, but the chances of that happening are slim to none. I think that would be awesome, but I also think it'd be very scary and embarrassing for our program. But, I mean, who's to say, you know, what can and can't happen? We get crushed by Ohio State a lot, and that would probably be the same thing with the program. But, no, I mean, Miles is hopeful that, you know, Copeland and Palmer are coming back. Pretty much, you know, you're expecting Roby to come back. I think it would be a fun game regardless, but you do have to have those games to prove you can be in the NCAA tournament. And whether it's the Kansas or Dukes, you need it. Nebraska's got to win it, plain and simple. I don't think it's a matter of scheduling more of those games. It's just a matter of winning it when you have that opportunity.
You mean they can't just beat Stetson like 13 times in the non-conference?
Nah, I guess that's not going to work, you know?
They tried it.
Yeah, they did. But
you know what was so funny, too, is when they came down to their RPI or whatever it was, it's like you take out one or two of those games that they won.
Yeah.
And like it's leaps and bounds better.
Which makes no sense. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, don't play teams that are 300 in the RPI when there's only 350 schools that play.
Don't win is the message, I guess.
Don't play them, I guess. sticking with a couple of college topics, actually, I just remembered that one of the ACC commissioners or presidents or whatever it may be, I don't remember his official title, but he said that they are talking about in their spring meetings, I think they call them, the potential of it being a 72-team tournament, basically making a second first four. And my friend Jake and I have petitioned for them to call it the 8 in Dayton, but I guess now it would not be in Dayton because of geographic reasons. Yeah. They'd play the other first four and the other one. But I don't know. I know we talked briefly about, you know, Frost said it should be an 8 team playoff for football, and will people be happy with 72? It's just so that the ACC and Big Ten can get a couple more stragglers in, and the ACC can say they got 13 of their 14 teams in, but half of them were in the, you know, the first now 8 or whatever you want to, I don't know what you want to call
I'm sure if you're some Nebraska fans, you're looking at that and going, heck yes, man, like we would have been in this past year if that was the case. I just don't want to see that. It's just going to be adding each more year and year. I get it more for the college football playoffs. You know, you get to see more football. That's awesome. Not that I don't want to see more March Madness. But do you really care about those playing games that much unless there's a team like USC playing in it? You know, otherwise it's more like, okay, let's just get over with this so I know who's in it for the next round of play. I mean, not that those will necessarily be playing games, but they probably will be. But I think just keep it at 68. It was a big deal when it went to 68. I think that's fine. Just go out and win the big games and hope the committee's in your favor.
I don't know how hot of a take this is. Not that I'm trying to like rip off hot takes here, but sticking with March Madness, my idea has always been basically not get rid of the seeding, but you get all the 68 teams that qualify, okay?
Okay.
And then you throw them all in a hat.
Oh, wow.
Or almost like Champions League where they just like draw out like what your bracket is. And so like, or maybe it's, you know, you give out the top seeds, but after that you don't give out any seeds. You just draw out and see who plays who. That way, that brings even more, like, you could have UNC playing Duke in the first round. And
I can't see any problems coming from that. That's flawless.
Right. But the thing, too, is, like, yeah, we have 68 teams, but then you look at the bracket and it's like, okay, well, one's going to go this far, probably. This team's going to go this far, probably. And then it almost, like, the Final Four is going to end up as the teams you probably thought they were going to be. Like, that's almost.
But if you look at this past year as an example,
I know, and I know that you can look back at the past few years, you know, whatever, but, and not all one seeds make it very often. That's why I thought it'd be interesting to, if they want to change it, do something like that. Make it almost like there's only a few secured spots, and then the rest is just, let's just throw them in a hat, pull them out, and see who plays who.
All right, I hear you. Well, speaking of college basketball still, Colton, big rec guy, I heard you got some firsthand experience, potential big news for the Huskers basketball team, yeah?
Well, if I would have known, I would have stopped, you know, did an interview, but at the rec, you're not allowed to have photo or video. So, but Deion Lyle.
Your shirtless mirror pictures say otherwise, but I'm just assuming.
Those are in private. I don't do that while deadlifting. Not that I do, but Deion Lyle, who was from Hastings, Nebraska, spent his first 2 years in high school at Hastings, Nebraska, and went to UTSA, did tweet out that, I would like to thank the UTSA coaching staff for giving me the opportunity for my junior season. I'm thankful for my time at UTSA and appreciate everyone who supported me. And with that being said, I have received my release and will be transferring. Now, like you said, I saw him at the rec. I can't say I knew that's who it was right away, but as when we got a caller, I went, oh, I just saw a guy that is, you know, basketball height, had basketball tattoos, and was decked out in UTSA. I was like, that probably
it
had to
up.
Be him. And I looked at the picture, and it, yeah, I had 2 + 2 = 4, and it worked out. But not to say that he's for sure going to Nebraska, but it is the potential because of, you know, his ties to Nebraska. As a junior for the Roadrunners, he ranked 3rd in scoring with 11.3 per game, and he tied the Roadrunners' single-season record with 96 three-pointers, and he was Conference USA's 6th player of the year.
Reminds me of myself.
Oh, yeah. Intramural. That's where we're going, Danny. All right.
Made it to the Final Four. That's about it this year for intramural team.
No confirmed news there, just Nebraska ties and potential. So we will wind down a Friday next on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Hail Varsity Radio winding down a Friday. We finally made it.
That's right.
We are alive and afloat.
Still on the air?
The wheels are on the wagon. Nothing's on fire. No dumpsters floating down a river.
I was just watching that video.
Did you really? That's a good one. Colton Stone alongside Danny Burke. Hit us up on Twitter at @2birds1stone, at @DannyBurke5. No Chris Schmidt as he is hanging out in Boulevard Wheatland. I'm a little jealous, but he also has to watch the Yankees, so, you know, whatever. Actually, well, he probably has to watch the Royals.
Yeah, Royals is the
punishment. Might be the ripping the Band-Aid off and just hoping it's okay. Like he said, maybe a couple of drinks will probably get you through the game. But wrap up here as the I stare into the eyes of a degenerate better. Danny, what are the lines and spreads for Saturday and Sunday's NBA games?
Well, first of all, it's called investing. Second of all, it's a hobby. And hobby, you can actually get your money back from it. So I'm not just spending the money.
Do you have Bitcoin?
No, I don't. I stay away from that. You'd be surprised. But yeah.
At least if you're going to lose your money, it's in a respectable way.
Yeah, exactly.
Sports. Yeah, betting on sports.
Yes. Some people may deem it respectable. Most people not. But
you know. And some horse named. No.
So anyway, Saturday night, big game. Celtics in Cleveland going against the Cavs. Celtics up 2-0 in this series. Surprising to me a little bit, at least. Thought it'd be 1-1.
Yeah.
You know. But Cavs, -6.5-point favorite. Who do you like, Colton?
Oh, I'm going to say if the Cavs are going to win one, it's going to be game 3. That's the way I'm going to put it. But I have stressed and stressed and stressed that if LeBron doesn't score 40-plus, they can't win a game. And then in game 2, he scored 42 on a triple-double. And they lost.
But it's like James Harden, you know, he scored 40, they didn't win, they got spurted out a little bit more, you think.
Right.
And it is a little different with LeBron, though.
It is, but at the same time, like, he held the ball 47% of the time, and there's this, that, the other. I just think he needs to spread his energy out.
Yeah.
He needs to play better defense not.
He only chooses when he wants to play defense.
Right. And I think that, you know, he scored 21 in a quarter. It's like, okay, well, maybe score 12, 10, 8, like spread out the scoring if you're going to try to score 40. You can't do it all, half of it in a quarter because you're going to waste your energy. So give me Celtics 101-99.
Ooh, Celtics, okay. See, I like the Cavs in this game a lot. I just don't see them losing at home down 2-0. LeBron, I'm just still going to pick him until they lose the series. I mean, that's what I just grew up. LeBron just ruining my hopes and dreams with the Bulls. I'm a little nervous about this spread, though. I could see the Celtics losing by 6, but for the sake of it, I'll take the Cavs. Give me 109 to 102, just beating the spread. 7 points right there. And then on Sunday, Rockets in Golden State going against the Warriors. Warriors 7-point favorite. Before we head out here, who do you like?
Give me the Hamptons 5. 131 to 115. I just think that the Warriors will bounce back. Steph Curry will have a better game. And if Kevin Durant goes off for 35-plus and Draymond plays well, I think the Warriors are going to take both games in Golden State.
I agree with you, too. I just don't see the Warriors losing this game by any means after that embarrassment of a game. So hopefully Steph Curry will bounce back. If you're a Warriors fan, not necessarily, you know, rooting for them by any means. But I do think they'll win. I think they'll cover. Give me Warriors 128. Let's go 120, just beating the spread.
There you go. He's Danny Burke. He's a degenerate. I'm Colton Stone.
I'm an investor.
Tomorrow, weekend edition, Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt, myself. We will be on in the morning. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks.